All glories, all glories to the Lord. And Om Maganata Niranjaka Janadana Slakshaya Taksho Militam Yena Tasma Hexi Gurudev Namaha Sri Chaitanya Bhavistam Tapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Bhuvakadamayam Tati Svapadanti Kam Nama Om Vishnu Braya Krishna Pasaya Bhutale Sri Matsi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Patarine Devasatta Sundavari Haska Chave Satarine Vansa Kapata Rudrasya Kripa Sindhu Bhevata Bhajita Nambaka Vedyo Vaishna Vedyo Namo Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Aitara Ashivadari Bhagavata Vindam Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, we'd like to read a short verse from Bhagavad Gita, chapter 15, text number 15, from the Yoga of the Supreme Person. Savachaham hirita hindustho matasmiti ajnanam apahanam cha Vireshasave aham veraya paranta kriyat viravete vachaham. Translation. I am seated in everyone's heart. From me comes remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. By all the Vedas, I am to be known. Indeed, I am the compiler of the Vedanta, and I am the knower of the Vedas. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The Supreme Lord is situated as Paramatma in everyone's heart, and it is from Him that all activities are initiated. The living entity forgets everything of his past life, but he has to act accordingly to the direction of the Supreme Lord, who is witness to all his work. Therefore he begins his work according to his past deeds. Required knowledge is supplied to him, and remembrance is given to him. And he forgets also about his past life. Thus the Lord is not only all-pervading, he is also localized in every individual's heart. He awards the different fruitive results. He is worshipable not only as the impersonal Brahman, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the localized Paramatma, but as the form of the incarnation of the Vedas as well. The Vedas give the right direction to people so that they can properly mold their lives and come back to Godhead, back to home. The Vedas offer knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, and Krishna in his incarnation as Vyasadeva is the compiler of the Vedanta Sutra. The commentation on the Vedanta Sutra by Vyasadeva in the Srimad Bhagavatam gives the real understanding of the Vedanta Sutra. The Supreme Lord is so full that for the deliverance of the conditioned soul, he is a supplier and digester of foodstuff, the witness of his activities, and the giver of knowledge in the form of the Vedas as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sri Krishna, the teacher of the Bhagavad Gita, he is worshipable by all the conditioned souls, thus God is all good and God is all merciful. It's a long report, so I'll stop with that section. Here we find that Krishna is in all things in the sense that he is all pervading. Everything is in one sense different manifestations of his energy. His Bahiranga Shakti, Tathasta, or Antaranga Shakti Potency. So the question, of course, is what aspect of Krishna is being manifested, what aspect of Krishna one is attuned to, what aspect of Krishna one is in connection with. We recognize that there is God's presence in everyone's heart. There is the super soul, the Paramatma. For our guests in certain traditions, the Judeo-Christian tradition, there is the understanding of the Holy Ghost. That there is this monitoring aspect. that actually nothing moves without some influence of the Godhead. But again, it's according to what is the quality caliber of the movement. Means that there are no accidents. Means that everything we do is being monitored. And it means that we're never alone. It means that there is never a situation where there is void of opportunities to be able to gain full purity, to come back to Godhead. There's never a time when Krishna has simply let Kali or let Maya or let sin dominate to its extent that there is no hope. Here we have this community, one of the Krishna conscious communities. It's a very special community amongst communities in our society, because we have about, I think, 500 plus devotees who are living here. We have the greatest amount of elder disciples of Srila Prabhupada in the movement. We have a tremendous congregation of children who are growing and very vibrant and processing and working out and unfolding in various ways. We have people from all different cultural, economic, racial backgrounds, from all different religious backgrounds. And so there is amazing heterogeneity that's a part of this community. And that is powerful, especially when the nucleus is kept foremost. Any situation where there is lots of variety, or there is lots of variegatedness, it complements, it adds, it brings a more holistic and powerful production and presentation when there is in fact a serious common ground, potent nucleus. When not, the more variegatedness, the more variety, the more chaos, the more pandemonium, the more fragmentation, etc. So our society is quite unusual in that we're one of the few societies in the world that every day has classes in the morning as well as in the evening, where as one speaks, there is investigation, scrutinization, and requesting for clarification. If this is done in a mosque, in a synagogue, in a shrine, normally the person will be considered out of order. But when a speaker speaks in the Vaishnava line, it's expected that there will be questions, clarifications, desire for connecting with precedent and according to our scriptures, and that is a part of the process for growth. Because it is understood that spiritual life, that where there is religion without philosophy, there is fanaticism and sentimentalism. And where there is philosophy without religion, there is no culture, there is simply speculation, interpolation, conjecture. So we have, in its constituted position as Vaishnavas, we have all of these, and the question is how often and how much do we use such. Srila Prabhupada explained that this Krishna conscious movement is a cultural movement for literally re-spiritualizing society. Therefore, every aspect of it is designed for spiritual progression. How we eat, sleep, make defense, how we investigate things, and what we conclude. It's all based on remembering that Krishna is in the heart, that it is for Krishna, that it is about Krishna, and therefore if it is about Krishna, it must be done in a way that the owner, the proprietor, the Supreme Parameshwar will be satisfied, will be in fact pleased. The spiritual environment of Sanatana Dharma, this eternal religion that we are processing, is about culture, family culture, spiritual culture. Just as in the realms of business, politics, etc., there's also culture. And according to the type of culture, determines how the individuals aggregate and what their aspirations and what they accomplish. It's becoming more and more known, even amongst materialists, that when it comes, for instance, to productivity, when it comes to business, that it is about 15 to 20% knowledge, expertise, 80% relationship. Just as some time back, the big phenomenal thing happening here in America, where the Americans are trying to understand how is it that the Japanese have excelled in technology. Even though, as Americans, we had better business schools, we had greater endowments, more prepared teachers, more facilities, but still, we were not excelling the Japanese. Millions of dollars went into the investigation, studies from Stanford University, to simply find that the Japanese had more of a family culture. It has a lot to do with the basic mindset that is there when an individual feels a part of the organization, the institution. When an individual feels that the vision of the institution is sound and it includes that person's well-being. When an individual feels that the leadership is about the greatest care of those who are participating. When the leaders themselves show from their actions more than their speaking that they in fact care and are ready to share the benefits, the difficulties, the achievements along with the club culture, the business or family culture. So spiritual life is even more of such because we are practicing now the activities that give nourishment to the soul, to stimulate the soul, to revitalize our Dharma consciousness, to act in sambandha, in relationship, where we ultimately have pure, sanatana, eternal relationship. That means it's not that we can do many things now and somehow we go back to the spiritual world. We go back to the spiritual world because we have become like that. We have become like residents of the spiritual world, and therefore we make a natural transition because we have entered into that mindset, that activity, that lifestyle. Lifestyle residence of spiritual kingdom is dāsa smīyo dāsu dāsa anudā, being the servant of the servant, of having pure relationships with serious unity with diversity, diversity with unity, Krishna-centered. We are one of the most diverse religions that have the most diverse theology. Because we understand ultimately it's not just a matter of being with God as the Aishvara, but having many variegated relationships with the Godhead and even within a particular rasa, so much variety. But all based on Krishna-centered position. So, often in institutions, there is a tremendous amount of crisis management. There is constant conflicts to deal with, to address, to resolve. As a matter of fact, an institution, a business, a family that is successful, we were discussing the other day, is successful because of its ability to judiciously, expediently, to righteously resolve conflicts. Wherever there is success, especially in Kali Yuga, or as you say, the age of quarrel, it is highly due to the ability to honestly address issues and to resolve them in a way that there is growth from the issue, there is expansion, and there is great opportunity for developing more auspiciousness. Where there is failure, it is clear that either the conflicts were ignored, that people were in denial, or they addressed them in a way that did not actually resolve, or they brought the same kind of mindset to the conflict, trying to resolve it, the same type of mindset that created it. As even mundane scholars are aware of this, Einstein says you cannot solve a problem with the same type of mindset that produced the problem. So often, same type of mindset of self-centeredness, egocentricity, sovereignty, where one is thinking that one is right and other free people's areas, ideas have no value, then it brings just that, it brings fragmentation. There are different ways to resolve conflict in conflict epistemology. There is first the idea that I win only by your demise. In our Vedic heritage, we understand this to be rather absurd. That one can only win by destroying, eliminating, devastating another to its entirety. This is the mentality. The lack of understanding of Vaikuntha's mood, a lack of understanding of how we're mounted by the Lord in the heart, a lack of understanding of how we have a responsibility to each other, a lack of love. Because where there is love, if someone is paining, whether they're right or they're wrong, you want to address the pain and help to deal with the problem, and you care, and so because you care, you're not just thinking you're paining and you made a fool of yourself, and therefore you're wrong, or you're paining, you must have done this, you're concerned about how to help to deal with the pain, to evaluate, to analyze, at the end of the day, how to relieve the pain. So that as one who you have love for, you're concerned about their well-being. And because you're concerned about their well-being, you know, the pain to you or the pain to them, and the wound is there, and the wound is a wound, but we heal, and we have wounds by not being in denial, by not denying the variables, by not exaggerating the variables, but by honestly putting variables on the table, explaining our particular wounds, understand it, and feeling good when those who wound us can understand that and are ready to make a difference, then the healing goes into place. When there is genuine sharing, appreciation, and beyond sentimentality, beyond excessive passionate activity, beyond activity in the mode of ignorance or passion, but activities that now bring about a more positive, synergistic, symbiotic solution. Otherwise, this win-win does what? No one wins, because when there's winning at the demise of another, then whoever is demised is never fully satisfied and just plans to see how they can do similarly. You have many governments, many organizations that people sometimes function in that way, and there's never any peace. There's one coup d'etat after another, one shift after another, one power play after another, and in the end, everyone suffers. Then there's philosophy that I win and you lose. First, I can only win by destroying you, finishing you off. Only way. The other way, I win, but then you lose. The other is, I lose and you win. And of course, the other is a win-win. A Vaishnava consideration is always based on not just trying to defeat someone. It's like we do not just try to defeat Christians, Muslims, Buddhists, Muslims. We have the nine offenses that one should not even speak to the faithless. Although we are supposed to be kind and merciful to everyone, Samoham Sarabhute Shu, then why is it that we do not speak to the faithless? Because if we preach in such a way that it makes someone offensive, we preach in such a way that there's no genuine communication, we preach in such a way that it's ego versus ego, then one does not produce the positive solution. So therefore, as the Vaishnava is analyzing a particular problem, he is bringing to that, looking at himself first at fault. Considering someone is in pain, someone is wounded, some problem is there. What did I do? What could I have done? What can I do to be able to bring about greater love in the situation, in the environment, to be the servant of the servant? What can I do? I am seeing this person as prabhu. Someone is in anxiety. Some conflict is there. What did I do improper? What could I have done? What can I do now? So one starts from that platform. And when there is a start, a platform different from that, then one has to look close at the nature of the agenda. Whether or not it is just a matter of overreacting, whether it is just a matter of materialism, whether it is a matter of bringing in egocentricity based on self-righteousness, or whether it's a real matter of the family culture, where at the end of the day, everyone grows, learns, and is able to experience spiritual life, greater sense of divinity, become more eager towards the goal. Otherwise, it's considered violence. Violence is not just a matter of physical assault, but it's anything that we do to another that does not somehow encourage that person to become free from the shackles of this Bhagavanga Shakti. And real association is association where what we say, what we do, what we arrange creates more chance for the Krishna conscious growth and experience. Srila Prabhupada, our founder of Charja, there's one example, many examples, but one example is coming to my mind many, many years ago when our movement was so new. And there was once a bhakti in New York named Bhakti Steve. And Bhakti Steve used to come around to the temple, and at some point he no longer was coming. And Prabhupada inquired from the devotees, where is Bhakti Steve? The devotees informed Srila Prabhupada that Bhakti Steve had committed suicide. Srila Prabhupada became very grave, start praying, crying, speaking out loud, and saying, "Dear Krishna," first he was saying how unfortunate it is Krishna has sent someone to us and we have not been able to give care for the proper care. Then he started praying and crying, "Dear Krishna, wherever that soul is, please let him immediately come back in the body of a devotee." Now here is someone who was not an initiated disciple, who was not a grand disciple, who was not even up to the point of following all the four rules and regulations. But Srila Prabhupada was so mercifully concerned that this person had come, and although he had his issues, that the society was not such that it was able to upgrade this particular person. And so therefore, Prabhupada felt sadness in this particular case. So we can see that when there are issues, we want to first look at ourselves and think, what can we do to make a difference? The material is always interested in daivi sampad. I'm sorry, asuric sampad, material assets. But we're looking at how to enhance the spiritual assets in an aggregate, particular type of manner. A devotee is not so quick to try to defend. Although we see constantly devotees are spiritual scientists. They want to declare, Krishna Su Bhagavan Swayam. Prabhupada was so much interested and eager in eradicating the sense of sunyavadi, impersonalism, voidism. But we see the greatest aspect of Srila Prabhupada was his character. We see that an example of Haridasa Thakur, he was not allowed in Jagannath Puri, as he was considered to be an outcast. But he proved his quality by his devotion. Sometimes situations are such that we cannot talk ourselves in or talk ourselves out of a problem that we've acted ourselves into. But we can only really act ourselves out where it becomes vivid and clear what the situation, what the solutions are. When Lord Chaitanya was being criticized by Ramachandra Puri, of course, this is an extreme case, and we're not suggesting that in these days we have Ramachandra Puri, because people are very, very deeply concerned in many, many environments. Like in our own environment, we're having a wonderful experience as we're taking inventory. Just 2 days ago, we're having discussions and conference on the woman's issue. And this today and yesterday, we're having this conference, discussions about guru issue and leadership issue. And this is wonderful in the sense that when there's no inventory, there will always be failure. And when there is proper inventory, there's a chance to look at what is happening, what is working, why it's working, why it's not, and a chance, if there is a spiritual family culture, a chance to see where to make the improvements. Many businesses, many groups, many institutions, many people themselves fail because they are not ready to take inventory, they're not ready to hear from others, they're not ready to look at what the ramifications of their activities. They're not ready to look clearly at sometimes if they think they're doing wrong, they're sending the wrong signals, how to function in a way of not to send the wrong signals. Or if they're doing the wrong thing, how to help me change and do that, that will be according to the spiritual rule of law. As we say, sadhu, shastra, guru, vaika, vidhi, kriyaka. According to shastra, sadhu, and guru. We see that Lord Caitanya at the same time, very expertly, defeated the impersonalists, the Mohammedans, and converted them. But he spoke to them in a way to connect, to be able to help them to understand that there was something higher, and to help them to understand he cared for them, and therefore what he was giving them was worth their value. And so, Prabhupada sometimes explained to us how to be truthful and to be palatable. But of course, how the greatest truth is from the results of how the bhakti or higher bhakti prevails. In our philosophy, we have, our guest, we have ways to check balance on things. We have shastra or spiritual scripture, just like any bona fide tradition has, and also has saints that bona fide and evaluate the things on a day-to-day basis. And then we have guru or acharya. And we understand that when all of these things are not consistent, there's a problem. And it must be immediately researched. And we understand that sometimes you can use Sadhu-shastra and Guru to come up with different conclusions. No problem. Then put the activities into operation and judge later by the results. But then how do we understand what is Sadhu? How do we clear about what is Shastra? How do we clear about what is Guru? So we understand that we have certain qualities that constitute Sadhu. Sadhu is Sitiva, Karunika, Sante, is merciful, he's tolerant, he's kind, he has sublime characteristics. So we have to also evaluate if there is something being offered, we want it to be offered by Sadhu. We want to look and see where there are Sadhu qualities. And where something is being offered is not being offered by Sadhu quality, immediately we know there is an inherent problem right there alone. And when there is by Sadhu quality, we want to see if it is in connection with Shastra. And so Shastra, we have the revealed scriptures that are available for us to check and to evaluate. And then we have guru or spiritual masters, spiritual mentorship. Now there are different ways, especially as we enter into more and more of an impersonal world culture, because we move from an agricultural civilization to an industrial, to a scientific, to now a data processing. So everything is becoming more impersonal, and there is more and more individual and collective movement toward lack of accountability. So people want to do things based on situational ethics, do things based on what is functional for the moment, do things based on what is rational, and that is okay for materialists. But for spiritual, they want to do things that is transcendentally blessed. Many things can be sociologically functional based on the rationality and have temporary results, temporary benefits. But when something is done that is spiritually transcendentally proper, then it is protected, it is blessed, and it is guided by that which is greater than one's own intelligence, greater than the maya or the illusion in the environment, as Kali is more powerful than anyone, but Kali has a boss. And when we are sheltered by Kali's boss, then there is success. So in this movement toward lack of accountability that happens on all levels, as well as in spiritual society, there's often desires to minimize rules, minimize what constitutes sadhu, minimize shastra. Matter of fact, the fall of civilization is actually the fall of the minical class. The fall of those who are supposed to be the caretakers, first by their example, then by their knowledge, by their instruction. As the Manusmita says, it is the leader that makes the age, not the age that makes the leader. So according to the quality of leadership determines whether it's Sattva Yuga, Treta Yuga, Kali Yuga, Dwapara Yuga, Dwapara Kali, or determines what aspect of a particular age is prevailing. According to the quality of leadership, and whether it's spiritual culture, political culture, business culture, also determines about the quality of productivity and the quality of success. One can never get away from leadership. It doesn't matter if you're in a mental institution, doesn't matter if you're in a prison, doesn't matter whether you're in a church, a mosque, a cathedral, or a family, there's always going to be some aspect where there is someone coordinating or acting in terms of leadership. What is most important in spiritual life is when there is dasyatmi servant leadership, where one basically leads because of a desire to serve, a desire to help, a desire to assist. So based on that, one moves in situations to try to be there for each other, to be the servant of the servant. But when there is leadership based on the fact that someone is thinking they have a better idea, they're the best, they're the greatest, they're God's blessing, then there is a problem with that. Because then it often can minimize the necessary love and concern and awareness about what the fill of activity to be able to be the servant of as many people as possible to bring about that based on Sadhu-shastra and Guru. So there are particular ways of how to avoid guruship, even though guruship and mentorship is always there, leadership is always there. I'll give you an example. I just put a little card here, just to take notice. In the Gnostic faith, there's a guru. The guru is called the Hierophante. In Christian mysticism, the guru is called the spiritual director. In Eastern Christianity, the guru is called the Starit. In Islam, the guru is called the Sheikh or the Imam. In Sufism, the guru is called the Sheikh or the Peer. In Hasidicism, the guru is called the Zadi. In Zen, the guru is called the Roshi. In Tibetan Buddhism, the guru is called the Lama. There's always the position of guru. The question is the quality of that particular leadership. The question is the endowment and how one is proper, because the proper student becomes the proper teacher. And so when one has been proper student, then one has the ability to be proper teacher. So there must be investigation on what is the quality of proper teacher. Now there's movement in general on personalism, because people rely more on commodity rather than community. They rely more on externals. They rely more on what is cosmetic based on their sense gratification. So there are four basic ways that is becoming very prevalent throughout the society of how people avoid the idea of guru or mentorship connection. The first way is through the consideration that one is just stimulated and guided by the heart. So you'll find this in many new ways for the heart. You see, the difficulty there is because then the mind, the intelligence, often becomes a majority, and one can do things, rationalize it all based on ego. And so it's a dangerous position. Or sometimes there is the minimization of what is a guru based on the fact that one is considering that guru is everywhere and everything, which can often mean that guru, a membership, is nowhere. Or often there is a tendency, third, the tendency to accept disembodied authorities or accept authorities that are passed on, because with such there can be a lack of accountability, or you move away from getting your butt kicked, or you move away from being chastised or criticized. And so often people prefer that kind of system. You find many people in pseudo-spiritual movements that are basically about psychic and mystical things. They can have great attention to the channeler, to the disembodied authority, to the angel, to the archangel, to the extraterrestrial, but no physical authority, because as long as they can do it based on this subtle thing, they can choose and accept and reject according to their mind. And then there's the minimization of guru based on the disposable guru. That sometimes we have the connection, we use it when we want, and we don't, then we discard it. So these are some ways that there is gradual increase in minimization. But we see, like according, for instance, to Bhagavad Gita, it is difficult. Bhagavad Gita 11:54, Prabhupada explains in the purport, without personal guidance from personal spiritual master, becomes impossible to understand Krishna. We understand that when Krishna himself comes into this world, every single time he comes and he accepts a personal guru. And he doesn't even need anybody's guru. Diksha guru, diksha guru, bhagavan prakash guru, he doesn't need any type. He doesn't even need sadhu. But every time he comes, he himself takes us to show us the necessity, the need that is there. When we go on, we see that Srila Prabhupada was a very special personality. He was a founder, a charger. This is not an ordinary guru. First, Srila Prabhupada was predicted in the Chaitanya Mangala as a Sinapati Bhakta. Lord Chaitanya said that he will spread the knowledge to Vat Vrasa throughout India. But there shall be one who shall come, who shall spread all over the world, who shall be like a bounty hunter, who shall literally go from country to country and spread the message, like reclaiming souls and planting the seed. The Lord himself has said like this, that there will be one who will do such. And then in the Brahma Bharata Purana, it mentions there shall be the Brahma, there shall be the Mantra Upasaka, who shall be the global spreader of the holy name. And in Bhaktivinoda, his Tushani, he mentions how there shall be, back in 1860, how there shall be one who shall get the holy name spread in all different languages of people chanting Jai Satyananda. So Srila Prabhupada predicted even before he physically appeared into this particular planet. These very highly, highly evolved souls were not just ordinary prophets, ordinary gurus, even ordinary acharyas. But when they are of this level, we see that not only do they do amazing, superhuman things, but even before they come, they are fulfilling a great aspect of Krishna's eternal mission as they come and they operate in such a way. After Prabhupada left the planet, the movement has gone on in different ways, and in some ways many, many mistakes. In some ways, many thought that they were little Prabhupada. Little Prabhupada as gurus, little Prabhupada as simple presidents, little Prabhupada as simple coordinators, simple commanders, sankirtan leaders. It's been a big problem of people trying to be Prabhupada on all different levels. And therefore, because of such, there's been a lot of manipulation, capitalization, a lot of exploitation, and a lot of dealing in situations where we're not fully qualified. Now what does that mean? Our position, it is very simplistic. We are like, for instance, some of us are spiritual masters.
And so what is opposition? We see the Lord Chaitanya says everyone should stay the land and become guru. Different types of gurus. But what are we? We are like what? Like a young girl at 12 years old. She becomes pregnant and has a child. She is a mother, but she is also a child. She will be a failure if she does not act as a mother. The child will simply be deprived and the child will suffer. But at the same time, if she acts as if she is a mature mother, the child will also suffer because she is a mother, but she's also a child, and therefore she must take notice and take shelter of maturity so she can understand how to evolve and to be a proper mother. So it is an extreme to say that she is just a child, yes. And it's also an extreme to say that she is a mature parent. Either way, there will be a failure. What Prabhupada has given us is something similar to a young student who is very young, 19 years old, but somehow they have a chance to go to high school. Let's say they have a chance to become freshmen at the university. What is the situation? This child has been given some mercy, some unusual situation, some great challenge, according to how it is looked at. If the child, first level, considers this is too difficult, I'll never be able to excel, the child will be a failure. If the child thinks, I am qualified for this, why didn't it happen a long time ago, the child will be a failure. But if the child considers, somehow this great mercy has come upon me, I'm only 9 years old, I'm put in freshman school, now I must work to come up to that, to be that, so that I can function on that particular level. If one denies, one will simply be a failure. One with one thinks that it's too difficult, one will be a failure. If one thinks that they're already like that, there'll be a big embarrassment and a big failure. But to the degree that they understand this is some rare mercy and they're ready to work up to that. When Prabhupada gave us first initiation, bomb initiation, sannyas, guru, to be booked for publishers, to be book distributors, to be cooked, it was all a chance to become that. It was a chance to be blessed, to come up to that, to be given encouragement, but it was not some kind of stamp that once we get Brahmin, we are Brahmin. It's now there are certain standards about being Brahmin, now come up and become like that, and it means a chance to grow, but also a chance, if we do not use it properly, we get electrocuted. Anytime something is very powerful, if it's used in the right way, there is tremendous growth, and not, there is tremendous inauspiciousness. Electricity is very powerful, you use it right, you get illumination, you lose it improper, you get electrocuted. There's life where I get, there's a different system of governance. There is communism, there is socialism, there's oligarchical arrangements, there's monarchy, there's democracy. We understand by Vedic cosmology, epistemology, ontology, archaeology, that the greatest system is monarchy. But when monarchy is not based on what is magnanimous, based on what is benevolent, monarchy becomes the worst possible system. Becomes tyranny, becomes just gross autocratic. But when there is a family culture, when everyone is concerned about everyone, when each person is playing their part, concerned about the effects of that, doing that based on, as we say, Sadhu Shastra Guru, then what happens is it becomes like a family. And one of the biggest problems in society today is the family units are falling apart. The family is a microcosm of the race, of the nation, of the planet. So when the family unit is falling apart, civilization is also falling. When institutions are not able to have that family culture, then they fall apart, and you have anarchy, you have posturing, you have power manipulation, you have conflict that become protracted, and gradually people suffer from all kinds of fallout. If your brother and your family is a drunkard, then your whole family suffers from that. As that person is living with you, everybody's experiencing some difficulties based on that particular person's lifestyle. So when someone is wrong, someone is pain, someone is improper, then it becomes a wake-up call how to assist that person. And the greatest way you assist your drunken brother is you show why you are not drinking, why you are not participating, and how you're accelerating because you are not doing that. Our greatest example, our example that speaks so loud based on the purity, based on the clarity. Whenever there is ambiguity, there is maya. Ambiguity in spiritual life is a distraction. It brings weakness of faith. It brings confusion about sadhu, sastra, and guru. So whenever there's ambiguity, there must be a quick way to try to exceedingly to resolve and deal with the conflict based on how to bring about a greater love and a greater focus on Krishna in the heart based on what Krishna wants. Because in Adi Lila, it is said that Lord Krishna in the form of guru appears to deliver the devotees. That means actually, Yayatamam Prabhajante, Tam Shari Bhadra, Mamamana Bhadra, Manusha Pajan Sarvasha. That literally, whatever is going on, Krishna is ultimately assisting based on the aggregate of desires and consciousness. So Krishna can work through a dog, through a donkey, through a prostitute. Krishna is the one who helps the living entity. Based on the purity of that living entity, Krishna will come through. And so therefore, the more one is pure, the more one will get the guidance that coincides and compensates, that is in concatenation with that level of purity. And to think that Krishna cannot come through, then it's to suggest that Krishna is not in everyone's heart, Krishna is not everywhere, Krishna is not merciful, Krishna is not all-pervading, Krishna is not Bhagavan. It's a matter of how, what aspect of Krishna that we're tuning into. It's Bahiranga, it's Atasta, it's Antaranga Shakti. And we're distinctly depending on Krishna's Antaranga Shakti. There is no ambiguity. It speaks out, it draws, it blasts out. So a problem often we have is a general lack of purity on all parts. And so what we all need to work on is how we can all become more pure so our actions will speak distinctly. So that this is in the case of Abhiram. He would go around and he would be able to evaluate the purity. If the deity was not installed, the deity would crack. When he offered obeisance to someone who was not proper, they would left. Who was it? Whose son was it? Nityananda's son? Do you remember? Nityananda's son. We should have Abhirams. We have meetings. We want to evaluate something. We bring in. We come in. We have the purity. We decide right on the spot. Not that we have to become constantly absorbed in interpolating and speculating, because Prabhupada said very clear when he had the argument with Professor Stahl. They went on and on, arguing point for point. Then explained that a pundit can argue anything based on having sufficient knowledge, can present any point, any good argument or debater, whatever the issue is, can argue for it and present a strong case. But the question is, where and how to what degree are we becoming free of sense gratification? Our mission is to come to the Vasudeva platform, to see Krishna face to face, to be able to have a problem, and then we go before the murderer and we ask you, Prabhupada, what do you want to be done? This is the issue we should be discussing. How do we come to a point that we no longer have this kind of ambiguity? We have stronger relationships amongst ourselves. We have children who are not taking drugs, children who are not engaged in illicit sex. We have children who are strong in devotion because they have faith in our devotion. But we have children who are bewildered and doing devious things because they do not see the system, they do not see enough of the leadership, they do not see enough in the family, enough to make them feel secure to move into that direction. So we look at our family culture to see how to deal with our immediate family to be able to serve and to offer the proper part. Krishna is watching our Yata Arita. He knows our ability. He knows what we have. And he's checking out how we're using what has been given to us. As he's in the heart, he is observing. Sometimes we overreact, or sometimes we inflate. But we must be careful not to delete. And this is nothing new. We see the time when there was divine rights of the kings, and they were so abusive. We see when the time when there was proper infallibility, when so much leadership, even from a monarchical, cultural, as well as from a spiritual point of view, had become corrupted. This does happen. Because when there is great chance to accelerate based on the spiritual adequacy, if it is abused, there is a problem. So we've all been abusers, sanguine leaders, presidents. We have majority of our sannyasis have fallen. We have so many of our gurus have fallen. And we have practically so many of our presidents have fallen. We have greater number of presidents that have fallen in practically any other leadership. And it means we have to look close to all see to what degree we need to purify ourselves and make a difference. By first being that difference that we're trying to act and put upon others. And if we do that, then our own purity will force others to become purity. If you come to me and you offer me drugs, you offer me intoxication, you offer me offensive discussion, it means there's something about me that allows you to connect with me on that level. But if I am properly, sufficiently a student of devotion, then you don't offer me a drug, you don't offer me intoxication, because you know it's outside of our relationship, outside of what I will intend. So we have a responsibility to all become pure, where our purity imposes on the environment and brings about the greater connection. And then we are discussing very fine shades of things, like the Goswami, still differences, but all based on our experiences, realizations, and how we're serving to the Prabhupada, and how we are drenched, and we're totally absorbed in the higher scheme of things. Otherwise, we see that we're not trying to become, even the Goswamis, even the Acharyas, we see that there were differences. But there was no enmity. There was even the spiritual war is enmity. But there is no attacking in the spirit of forgetting that others are Vaishnavas, or in the spirit of thinking that one is all right and another is all wrong. So I want to stop in a minute because I'm running out of time, and I definitely want to have questions. Otherwise, it seems like I'm just saying something and then I'm running out. But I want to learn from the questions. This movement is the movement of Madhavendra Puri's movement, Jiva Goswami's movement, Sanatana Goswami. It's the movement of Bhakti Siddhanta, Bhakti Vinod, Srila Prabhupada. They are always on the case. But at the same time, they've given us a system where we are to be acting in our devotional service based on our relationships, and always ready to be dasa-smith. Always ready to have many gurus to learn from the end, like in the case of the Ashanti Brahmana. Always learning constantly. Someone who is actually very serious, every opportunity is a chance for them to learn from some kind of mentorship. They even learn from somebody who's deviating, how not to deviate, or what the results of those are. What of having guidance? One is always trying to get guidance, trying to be processing, but also trying to put it based on satisfaction and do. So Prabhupada is our eternal shiksha, because he is the founder of Acharya. Very similar to the case of Ramanuja Acharya. In the Ramanuja Sampradaya, it is always that the founder is very, very special. The guru is basically assisting others in trying to move with Ramanuja's great blessings as is being offered to Krishna. So it is not that they are not taking the position of guru, or not that that personality is unimportant, is gone, but all of those things are there. It's not an either or. We're so much making things either or. We're making it that guru is to be Nitya Siddha, and then we have the Zono Acharya, and now we're demasculating guru, where we're creating some kind of strange sort of arrangement where we can't even act like a family. Even if I speak to my father, I can speak to my father and say, Dad, and my uncle is happy with it. But we have a situation now, if somebody is speaking about their guru, then their uncle gets disturbed. He is not my dad. This is how crazy we become and confusing our family. You understand, if somebody is saying, calling their dad by their dad's name, you realize that that's a relationship and you honor that because you're glad to see the family is there. But we're in a mood that we're minimizing somebody trying to make some expression of their father, and we say, he may be your father, but he's not mine. Or we look at them like we don't want to hear that. It weakens the family culture. It means that we're considering that while we're saying putting Prabhupada in the center, we're minimizing the fact that Prabhupada is not just history. But actually we're saying Prabhupada is history. Prabhupada is still alive, his family is still there, even to the point that when we see, this is a little esoteric, but we see when great personalities come, beings come before them, when Krishna comes and his eternal associates, then beings come before them and set up the environment, they come with them and some come after. And so, because we have had initiation by Prabhupada, that is wonderful, but there are some personalities who are also part of Prabhupada's arrangement for this planet who didn't get the physical initiation from him, but who are connected with him, but connected with him as grand disciples, connected with his shiksha, who also have as much to do with this movement as we do. And we cannot minimize this people's work. If we minimize their spiritual growth, we're actually hurting ourselves. We're hurting the Goswamis, who ultimately will make it happen, because this is a leela of Lord Chaitanya. It will happen. It's a matter of what entities are able to do it. But we minimize all the 20, 30 years of work that so many of us have done. When there is another chapter that can also assist in it, we want to give them encouragement. And so we want to move more toward raising the standard of consciousness of those who are in all positions. And not just thinking that we can legislate love, that we can make many laws, but if we don't change consciousness, we're just going to have other types of problems. Yes, the laws can help to gear toward that, but if the love of Krishna, love of Guru, Krishna in the heart, doing it for Krishna is not the priority,
then it just becomes another arrangement for crisis management that then brings other types of protracted problems.
Is it unfair to accept the new disciples who have to accept the conditioned soul as guru and Srila Prabhupada came and was there for everyone, and all of a sudden now we can't have that, we have to go through a conditioned soul?
One should always try to get the highest type of guidance as possible. But what did Prabhupada himself say? Prabhupada himself said, Akram Bala, he said, it is not that I am liberated. He said, I am conditioned. He said, but my spiritual master, Parinanda, is liberated, and because I follow him, therefore I am liberated. This is what Prabhupada himself has said.
But we all know that we are Prabhupada liberated.
How do you know?
We can tell in our hearts.
Why then did so many majority of servants who served Prabhupada fell down? Because they misperceived certain things. So they didn't know. So they didn't know. Some of our greatest scholars who associated with Prabhupada have fallen down. Many people who, if they had to be with Prabhupada now, there would be so much tremendous offenders. Because we have our perception of Guru as being God. We have a perception of Guru being some type of magician. Prabhupada, I'm not degrading my spiritual master, I'm just trying to identify something happened. Prabhupada learns a good verse, false, he's going to be everything. So what would he say? Would he say he conditioned soul? No, but we have to see through the eyes of the Shastra. But many people around did have problems like that, and we should understand that. Many of those who were with Prabhupada closely did fall down because they started misperceiving, or they were not constantly looking at things based on through the eyes of the scripture. They were thinking that their own eyes, their own intelligence, was all that they had to depend on.
Yes,
and temple presidents, and most temple presidents than anything else.
When that term was given to Srila Prabhupada about a fallen guru, he said that term doesn't exist. There's no such thing as a fallen guru.
So just like there's no such thing as a fallen Brahmin. In the sense,
if a person is a bona fide guru, there's no question of a fall down. That's what Prabhupada said.
No. Just no disagreement on this. I'm saying that there are those who've taken the position of Brahmins, who've taken the position of sannyasi. If a sannyasi falls down, he also was not a sannyasi. If a temple president falls down, it was not a bona fide temple president. But one was given that position to act in that spirit, in that mood. So yes, if a guru falls down, it was not a bona fide guru.
If that bona fide guru was not a member of the temple
president. Yeah. Just as that temple president... That temple president was a part of the ISKCON society and was getting a chance to represent Srila Prabhupada. So the fact that that person deviated meant that he was not a full proper representative of Srila Prabhupada. So anyone who does not properly represent Srila Prabhupada is being given a chance. And how we use that chance, and that determines what our situation is. But Krishna, it says, hey, Krishna says, I give them. Those who worship me, who love me, he says, I give. So it's all about Krishna, according to how much we are receptive, receiving, and Krishna's doing. If it's not happening, it means we're not letting Krishna be able to do it. I'll come back. Let me take one or two others. Well, Srila Prabhupada explained how Jesus is our guru. And one of the things that's so powerful about Vedic knowledge, not only is it the oldest scripture known to humankind, most encyclopedic, but it has some of the most amazing theology about what happens when we finally do attain connection with the Godhead. It gives us what we find in all interconnections of bona fide theology. Like the Bible says, how the pure in heart shall see God. And in the book of John, it says, not anyone should know the Father, but he would love God to know God. And then in Revelation, the very last chapter, it says, there shall be those who shall be known as servants of God, shall have the mark of the Lord on their forehead, and they shall see his face. In the Hadith, which is connected with the Quran, it says, the highest experience in paradise is to have the vision of Allah. In the Quran, it emphasizes that Muhammad, that when he had his ascension, this is Islamic theology, that when he went from the lower planet to the medium to the higher, then he went to what's called the heavenly kingdom, At that point, he went beyond what is called Sudratil. Sudratil is where it said that he saw Allah face to face. And it said that he had a relationship with Allah as like friends, putting his hand on Allah's shoulder. So there is this inner, deeper connection that we go, more and more we find that it brings us to a point of personal reciprocation with the Godhead. Or like in vital mysticism, or sometimes in the monastic order, the idea of the nun marrying God or becoming like the wife of God. So in Krishna consciousness, it explains about the Supreme Lord as being the Supreme Personality, that there is an eternal relationship that every single entity has with Krishna, eternal service. It can be in neutrality, it can be in servitude, it can be in friendship, it can be as a parent, or it can be as a lover. So what it tells us in essence is that just as in mystical Krishna says, so below, so above, so below, or the fact that Jesus says in my Father's house there are many, many mansions, means that there's much variegatedness in the spiritual realm where it is centered around actual service and communication with the Godhead. So the Bible doesn't say the pure in heart shall think about God, shall reflect on Him, and shall see and shall be. The Quran, the Hadith, many other scriptures emphasize that, and the Bhagavatam start from that platform. Bhagavad Gita starts from the platform of where religion starts. It starts from the platform where Krishna, God, is talking to Arjuna, now giving him all information that is noumenal and phenomenal. So it really starts where religion starts. Religions are basically vehicles to bring us with ethics and morality, a sense of principle-centeredness, a sense of faith in divinity. And once that's there, then the thing is, what are the activities, what are the relationships in that particular permanent state? And so that is the science of Krishna consciousness, science of the soul and its unfoldment and its relationship. So I'm already somewhat behind, but I'll stay around for more questions and things. There's a feast today, and they warned me about the time. I didn't mean to talk quite so long, so we have more time for questions. But thank you very much. As I said, I always love to come here because there's so many wonderful devotees, one of our most important temples in the world. I'm really happy to come at this time where you're having these sort of discussions. I've learned so much from different devotees, and I've learned more from those I disagree with than those I agree with, because we can learn so much and understand so much about where our family is at in the state of evolution by not just those who we fully agree with, but those who have various states and various understandings and various considerations and various things to present based on the fact that they are integral, important members of this movement. Every single devotee is so important. Anyone who somehow has come under the shelter of Lord Chaitanya, of Lord Nityananda, at this particular time, in this dispensation, this point in evolution, is very, very special. One of the things that hurt our movement more than anything else is how we sometimes minimize the potency of Vaishnava, of Sadhu Sangha, whether it's Bhakta Jain or Bhakta John or somebody who's 20 years or 30 years, that for Krishna, none of that makes a difference. It doesn't matter whether you're a DBC, whether you're a sannyasi, whether you're a grihastha, whether you're a woman or a child, Krishna is looking at our love. And we've seen time and time again, many people have done many, many powerful things, but if their heart wasn't in the right place, then there will be some failure. Krishna will give you many opportunities to make a change, but if not, because Krishna is Atmaram. He doesn't need anything, doesn't want anything, but he wants us to position ourselves to receive his love. And therefore, as we have many problems and many challenges, it can actually be used to increase our desperation. See, this is a beautiful time in our society because many people are becoming more desperate in trying to see how to help. And if that desperation is there, they are blessed under the Prabhupada. If that desperation is there, then it means like they're calling for help, they're calling for guidance, they're calling for divine intervention, they're calling for Prabhupada, that this is your family, the family we have in problems, we have a difficulty trying to cope, trying to exist, trying to expand, please come and help us. And when enough people are doing that with sincerity, whatever else is going on, that will enhance and produce and move the movement like anything. So we're at a time that is like birth pains. A new chapter is about to open. Because everywhere there is material as well as spiritual environment. And don't think it's only happening in our society. It's happening in all kinds of spiritual institutions. There's all kinds of exposés. These are the days that whatever you have is going to come out, and whatever you don't have is going to come out. People are not going to be so easy to hide behind institutions, hide behind positions, hide behind gender, hide behind other types of things. Whatever people have, it will come out, and whatever you don't have, it will also come out. We just have to be perceptive and start watching as things come out. Sita Prabhupada! Yeah!